The first time I ever heard of female genital mutilation, I was a teenager. I remember attending a youth conference during which a few women shared their traumatic experiences with FGM and the work they were doing to help eliminate it. I remember going through an array of emotions: fear, disbelief, disgust, and mostly sadness. As a teenage girl, I was still trying to come to terms with the many uncomfortable ways my body was transitioning. So I could hardly imagine how dreadful it must have been for those women to embrace their body, especially when it was violated at such a tender age. Truly, how can one possibly learn to love their body when they were dispossessed of it? I later learned that for someone to undergo partial or total removal of their external genitalia with no health benefits whatsoever is a multidimensional disaster, mostly carried out on young girls between infancy and age 15. This practice can not only cause extreme health complications, but also completely destroy a girl's self-worth and trust in her caregivers. FGM also raises a lot of questions about our belief systems. First, what does it say about our societies when we teach our girls that the body they were naturally born into needs fixing? Plus, what does it say about our societies when we tell our girls that in order to be worthy of love and companionship, a part of themselves literally has to be cut out? And finally, what does it say about our societies when we subject our girls to violence at such an early age while still expecting them to grow into women who will serenely engage in sexual intercourse and gladly put at risk their vulnerable bodies for the sake of social reproduction? FGM is indeed a paradox that affects over 200 million women in the world, according to the World Health Organization, with 80% of cases occurring in Africa. We all know that statistics can sometimes make some atrocities seem very distant. But let's put it this way. There's a high chance that you know someone or someone who knows someone who experienced FGM. So to bridge the distance, today, we're talking to a very special lady. Mariam Dahir is a medical doctor from Somaliland, and she has dedicated her life to fighting against this form of gender-based violence. She knows too well how culture, religion, and society can be used to control women's bodies and justify the unjustifiable. But most importantly, she knows how to deconstruct systems of oppression. Welcome to the Climb Podcast, where we tell extraordinary stories of the African youth. My name is Hadijatou Cissé, and I'm your host today. When Mariam Dahir enters the studio, I quickly understand why and how she inspires so much respect and admiration. A Somali doctor, researcher, and anti-female genital mutilation activist, Mariam exudes quiet strength. When she enters a room, you can feel both her warm energy and her fighting spirit. And as I will learn later during the interview, she has indeed fought many battles. But before embracing her calling, I wonder what it was like growing up as Mariam Dahir.
I was born in Somalia, but I grew up in Djibouti and in different countries, Libya, Qatar. You know, Somalia was unrest for a quite while, like 10 years. So we were moving to one country to another when I was young. And then I went back to Somalia. Rather Somaliland, It's a bit different. Yeah, in Cambodian, always like it more on cars, playing football instead of dolls or something like that, that other girls like. So I feel like I was a bit different. And the other thing I remember that I used to ask a lot of questions. My mother used to call me BBC because I was asking her every question like comes to my mind. What's happening there and what's there? And looking back now, I was curious to know more, to learn more. And yeah, that was my younger life look like. Mariam was always against what the people tell me to do. I always followed my intuition. And I really wanted, even coming to medical school was a miracle because I was the first person in my family that maybe are 40 members, finished a secondary school and also joined the university. But I never wanted to be a doctor. I wanted either to be a lawyer, and that was my passion, and also a journalist. So my family became against that because they thought that that is not in line with the female career. So they said either you become a teacher, nurse, or a medical doctor. So I chose the highest one, at least. And then later on, I really changed my... I left the clinic early on, and I joined the programs, activism, and... So that's how I shaped my life through hardships in early life. And I always wanted that person who are not being defined by others, but by me.
Inside Mayam's heart and soul, there seems to be so much love for her community, as well as a burning desire to fight against injustice. She tells me about the key moments in her journey as a medical doctor and activist.
Because I was outside the country for my young age, my mother did not perform FGM to us. So it was not something that subjected to me, but I was not aware and she did not tell us about it. Although I have seen some girls being sick for long because they have been circumcised, but that was not my intention at the early on. But when I come to the clinical work, I realized that women are suffering with childbirth. They are closed up, and you have to open, you have to cut them. They suffer. They go to C-section, some of them die, and some of them, they develop fistula. So that's the time I really realized it. This is not something good at all. And I dig down and I asked my mother, my grandmother, and my relatives, why this is happening. And everybody said, your mother is not, don't perform to you because you are outside, but it is a good, it's hygienic, it's cultural, it is beautiful, and all of that kind of things was just triggered me to not perform that kind of thing to my daughters, as well as to any other woman who will be born after that. So that is where I started. And now we have a very growing community, especially youth. I am the chairperson of the youth and the FGM Somaliland, although I'm not youth anymore.
You look young to me.
Oh, thank you. But I'm about to get out that line. And I really want to give another person a chance, maybe this year, to step down. And we have a very big community, especially in Somaliland, that the youth are speaking up. FGM, and we have a very good number of women who did not perform any form of FGM. I remember beyond my activism, even my personal life, I actually become again when I just grow up a bit. I actually asked for divorce, and that's very difficult in my family and in my clan and my community. They actually against that the woman to ask for divorce because the man got married to another woman. They said this is okay, and I said no, that's not me. Me is different. I am Mariam, who is educated and who wants to have future pride and pave the way to many women who are actually not seeing a good future for themselves. So that is where I started to be a rebel and become the person, and I actually wanted to be a role model for many women who are stuck in their life. And I am now seeing that. And many women are actually reaching me to, through Facebook, WhatsApp, and saying, Mariam, because of you, we have done this. Because of you, I left this. And I went to the university and all of that. So I feel like wanting to be who you are, it is just determinations who you want. And I really doesn't want it to look like somebody who is Western, and I am still on my hijab, and I'm still on my terms, but I don't want to be a living injustice, and I don't want to be less. So always aim high, always. I remember one of the during my activism on GM, the religious guys were actually pushing me hard. And one of the meetings, I actually deliberately went there. I was not invited. But they were discussing FGM, and they were all men. So I just went there, opened my door, opened the door, and I just sat there. They look at me, who are you? And I said, I know the religion. I memorized all the 30 chapters of Quran. I know all the hadiths. So tell me, where is the Quran and where is the hadith allowing FGM, allowing injustice, allowing the woman to be harmed? Our religion is beautiful and neutral, and is promoting to not harm any kind of human being on earth. And they look at me and say, how on earth you are talking on this? You are a woman, you shouldn't come to this room. We are the leaders, and actually push it back. And they felt, really, they felt that there is somebody coming after them. Because always they say, we know the religion of the woman. But I showed them all my justifications. And that is the one of the things that pushed them to do a fatwa. Actually, they released a fatwa that they are criminalizing type 3 of FGM, but they are allowing type 1. And I'm still not yet reaching my goal, but at least they felt that they should do something.
Female genital mutilation is often performed by traditional cutters who happen to be women most of the time. As a woman and a feminist, I can only imagine how difficult it must have been for Mariam to go against the current. I asked her how she managed to face her own community and challenge their beliefs and practices without creating a wall between her and them.
The things helping me to navigate around and also people accept me is that I'm because of a medical doctor. Our people actually believe that the medical doctors know more. And they said, okay, when you say I'm a doctor, they look at you, they come to you. One of the things is that when I go to the communities, especially in rural areas, I dress like them. I eat what they eat. I talk like the way that they talk and say, oh, you're educated and you know this. You're educated and you know how to milk the cattle. You know this. So always be, don't go like you are superior or don't go that you know more, as you said. Just go the basis, the way that they are. They just infiltrate. Just show them that you know the culture, you know the religion, you know, and this is thing that you are doing for them to be healthy. Their women to be healthy, because in our community, I show them from the different perspective. It's like, if I go and I say, FGM is a human right, again, it's a human right, they will never understand. But I will say, you know, how many women died in your community because of childbirth? You say, so many. I lost my sister, I lost my wife, I lost this. I said, yes, do you know why? Because of this and that. Yes, because she bleed, because this. It's starting from that, like self-side, in personalizing the scenario. People listen to you. That's what most of them, they left the type 3. And that's a very harmful one for only. And now they're moving to the lesser harmful ones, but I'm after that. So most of, sometimes when I'm talking to the guys, they say, this is woman thing. You are the one who's cutting, you are the one who is performing, you are the one who's being subjected to. So women bleed because they want to please the community. They want to, the peer pressure speak. The girl, if you not cut, they will not call halal. That's what the way the term Somali community perceive the FGM. They say halalain, means the person to become halal, to become pure. It's such a kind of a, what can I say, right passage to the womanhood. So they don't want their girls to be discriminated, insulted. So that's why they are cutting their girls. They want their girls to not be rejected by marriage or something like that. So speaking to them is more difficult than men. Men will say, oh, okay, but it's not me who's performing. But women, to take them for that level of feeling shame without FGM, and showing them the pain that she's been through from a childhood to the birth, and telling them that you want this pain to happen to your girl and to your grandchild and goes on. They say, no, but, okay, let us start from but. Who is going to leave your girl? Say, the man will not be, the dowry or something, the marriage will be rejected or something will be very shameful. And then, okay, why are you not talking to your boys? Your boy will marry to her daughter. So speak to your boy and say this and start talking. See, they started now kind of a woman-to-woman education. They start learning how to leave that kind of a culture, that kind of a painful practice. And yeah, women to speak to each other. And I always show them that I am not subjected to FGM. And I have children, and I have this, and all of that. They said, okay, but you were outside. And I said, but I've been married inside the country and been accepted. So what's wrong? And that is the way I actually approach women, through their pain, and the pain that have been, they live for their life from the 7th year up to the to now.
And there's still so much Mariam would like to do and say. She tells me about her contribution to the proposed law against FGM in Somaliland and what she hopes it will achieve.
The process was, from the beginning, there was owned by NGOs. So NGOs come in, and international NGOs especially, they just hire a consultant. The consultant just doing small thing, and then they bring it to the ministry, and the ministry rejecting it. So in 2018, we come to know there is many drafts of low, FGM low, and there's a lot of policies that are fragmented, but not yet joined. And so actually it was my idea. I can say that I talked to the minister and she was a female. That's why I say I want female ministers everywhere. And she understood that we need to form anti-FGM board. And actually she agreed because I went to Kenya, anti-FGM board, they have a very established, well-established anti-FGM board. And I actually got an exposure and I learned it from them. So when I went back to Somalia and I said, we really need such kind of thing because our law should be harmonized and take it to the parliament. So yeah, she agreed, and actually we never had another female minister again after that. So she agreed, and she nominated 7. Actually, there was two male and 5 females, and I was the secretariat because I know how to do it, the computer and something, because they were well-known women and men, and the head of the NGOs, and local NGOs, not international NGOs. That process gave me to understand more on ownership. Yeah, actually, as you said, owning your narrative is important, because all the consultants that came outside, they did not know about Somaliland culture and something like that. They drafted something, or they just get some law outside the country and they just changed the name. And where is the Somali? They put Somalia, where is the Kenya, and then the Khalas.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
So we started drafting our own one, and unluckily we are still stuck in somewhere because the minister changed, and there is a lot of turnover within the ministry. And actually now I'm advocating to have it, because the Ministry of Women is under the ministry that handles women issues, is under the Ministry of Family. And I'm now advocating to have a standalone minister for women that can be harmful for everything. Because if you're under the family and under the labor and something like that, you will not be seen as a priority.
It seems that Mayam has done it all. She is a mother, a medical doctor, a researcher, a lecturer, an activist, and now a postgraduate student. And the list goes on. But as the interview comes to its end, she seems to have understood that superheroes need some rest too.
Because if Mariam was not stubborn, resilient, strong, pushing things back and not being like a rely on what the other people say, I will not be here today at all. So that's one thing I really wanted to say. But one of the things that I realized when I was working, it is that I have worked myself a lot. I was a mother. Now I have 4 children. 3 children when I was in school, and now I had a 1-year-old.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and... yes, I really wanted to take a break. Inhale, exhale, take rest. Sometimes go offline because I'm always online. I always look where is yesterday I was just posting some, because I have seen the Minister of Health had a meeting and all were men. 0 women, and I was saying, where is the woman? And this started discussion. So I always have an eye on that. So I will let her to say no. And everybody, actually, every woman who is going through social change or career or something like that, take rest. Sometimes if you say, I remember as a researcher, I used to say yes to everything. Bring this, and maybe I have a full research on my desk, and I don't know how to finish, and I stay about 5 a.m. So, yeah, take time.
But in the meantime, our Somali superhero has some advice she'd like to offer our listeners, as well as her own children.
My daughters are very stubborn like me, so I will say, like, be the way that you are and always go aim higher and never give up. For my boys, please respect women in every circle they are.
That was really nice. Thank you so much for talking with us. I've learned so much. I could spend the rest of the day talking to you and just asking random questions about your journey.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time and thanks for your work. It's so important, so essential.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks.
This episode of the Climb Podcast was hosted by Hadejatu Sisse and edited by Jewel Etedo-Bright. Special thanks to Miriam Dahir for allowing us to tell her story. The Climb Podcast is a podcast collaboration between the Channels Media Group and the Firoz Lalji Institute for Africa at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Thank you for listening.